Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
We need to be on some F Trump stuff right now.
You. The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from? The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotaro. This is episode 241, part one of our trip to Soundset. Soundset is a festival in the Minneapolis area put on by the Rhymesayers label. It's been running since 2008 and has grown from a show in a warehouse to a day-long outdoor event featuring some of music's biggest acts. This year, performers included the Wu-Tang Clan, Erykah Badu, Migos, and Logic. This past May, I went to the festival, where I connected with The Cipher's longtime audio editor, Rob, to hang out and talk to the performers. And over the next two episodes, you'll hear the results. In this episode, you'll find conversations with Rhapsody, Greaves, K-Salam, Sa-Rock, and Prof. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the first half of The Cipher's Soundset special. If you like The Cipher, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thecipher show. Each new patron puts Josh a little closer to actually being able to buy a ticket to come with us next year. Also, we know some of you want shirts and other stuff, so please go to merch.thecipher show.com and get yourself a t-shirt. If you want to know any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecipher show.com to find a complete list and the show notes. And now, to start the show, here's our talk with Rhapsody. She's a North Carolina-based rhymer who started her career after teaming up with producer Ninth Wonder. Rap has moved from critical favorite to star in recent years. Her last album, Layla's Wisdom, was nominated for 2 Grammys, and you can catch her on an episode of the new Netflix documentary series, Rapture. So we're here with Rhapsody.
Yes.
Thanks so much for being on Cypher. I really appreciate it.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Amazing to have you. I unfortunately have been back here all day and didn't get to peep your set. But my friend who was here said you got a little up close and personal with someone during the
I did.
The
I set. Had to back it up on him and let him know it was real.
Is that a staple of your show?
Just it is, man. You see guys bring girls up all the time. So that's my way of flipping it. Like, don't think girls can't get you back. Them guys, they don't be knowing what to do. So it's a fun part of the show, though. Like, you know, it's one of my favorite parts of the show.
That's amazing. And I see you're wearing a Rapture shirt.
Oh, yeah. Rapture's on Netflix now. I'm on episode 106, Raising the Bar. Y'all go check that out.
Music to me is poetry with great emotion. And that's why I call myself Rhapsody.
My goal is to be one of the best rappers ever. I think women...
How long did the crew follow you for?
They follow me maybe like 4 or 5 weeks, you know, split up over maybe 6 months. They came to my hometown. They came to Raleigh, where I live now, to our studio, Bright Lady, Jamla Records House. They went with me to, you know, some festivals, Rock Nation office, some interviews. Like, you know, we was tagging it.
They get anything that you were like, I don't know if that should make it in there?
Nah, not at all. Very respectful of the space, you know. So they always ask, are you cool shooting this? What do you want to shoot? So it was a really dope experience. And I'm glad I got a chance to do it. And I'd love to do it again. Like, you know, the whole crew, Gita, you know, directed mine.
Reparation and apologies for Africa to America odysseys. Guerrilla type tactics on them socialistic fallacies. It'd be about the devastation of the social Darwinistic thought. Keep a brown man down.
That's Gita Gunbeer, who also co-directed last year's HBO documentary I Am Evidence and began her career working on Spike Lee's films Malcolm X, Girls 6, and Bamboozled. She was also an assistant editor on Ernest Dickerson's 1994 movie Surviving the Game, which you can hear all about in episode 205, and is fucking great.
Mass Appeal helped push it and create the idea, so it was really dope.
So glad to have you, obviously. And one of the things I've loved about you since the mixtape days is just your style and sort of the way you think about words and rhythm is very different than so many other rappers. And it's almost kind of bordering on poetry in a way, I think, that is pretty unique.
I ain't the next Miss Hill. I ain't the next him or her. I'm just the one y'all feel. Got a Ninth one to deal. And see rappers mad at us. Y'all think backwards, part of a guild of rappers.
Can you tell me how you think about rhythm and phrasing? Who were your biggest inspirations for that?
Early on, like, I have a poetry base, honestly. Before I started rhyming, I was doing spoken word and writing a lot of poetry. So that's definitely always been an element. But when it came to, like, cadences and finding the rhythm and, you know, style, Lauryn Hill, like Jay-Z, I studied them. Biggie's one of the best flowers ever. Snoop Dogg, you know, those are probably the biggest ones.
Sounds like people who are kind of more conversational.
Definitely storytellers, you know, people that are super lyrical. Like, what you can do with words is amazing to me. Like, you can take words in two bars and it can be a whole thought that you could teach a whole hour, 2 hour class on. So, you know, that's the beauty of words and wordplay and where to place those words that I always fell in love with and I love the challenge of.
For some of the stuff like that where you're trying to slip in ideas that have maybe two or three levels, can you talk about kind of this idea of, like, you have to have something that makes sense on the surface? So if someone hears a song, it doesn't sound nonsensical, but then also they can kind of go back into it. How do you stack those layers?
Yeah, I think it's just either you get it or you don't. And that was something I had to even work on because, you know, in the early days, I was so complex, a lot of people wouldn't get it off bat. Unheard of, my word up, night one they told me wreck it. My drive, they turn to five ghosts, never do they see me. I'm up early, butter and toast, yo, eating Wheaties, trying to get my thoughts together from dreams on pasta pedis. I had last night holding the mic. But, you know, I had to figure out the art, which, you know, Jay-Z's amazing at, and Ab Soul is amazing at, where it's simple but complex, where you can say something like you say on the surface level, it means something else, but you can go back, it's called entendres, and it can mean this, and then it can mean a third thing, and it might can mean a fourth thing, like, you know.
Have you ever had lines that you yourself weren't fully aware of their meanings till
completely,
later?
Completely, like, it happens to me all the time, like, I have a bar, might have one or two, sometimes three meanings, and then the listener will find something else, I'm like, wow, that works too, like, yo, that's crazy. Like, it happens so much, though. So that's the fun part of putting the music out and just watching people on Twitter talking about it and get their own meaning from it. Like, that's dope.
What's coming up for you now? What do you have in the works?
You know, definitely more festivals, more shows, and more music. So, you know, just working on the next album.
Anything you can tell? It's just us. No,
can't tell nothing.
Okay.
Got nothing. Working on another Jamlas the Squad, too, with the label.
Oh, wow. It's been a while since a compilation.
Yeah, it's that time. It's that time to bring that back. You know, just trying to get on other people's projects. So, yeah.
You said it's obviously festival season.
Yeah.
Giant outdoor stages like this, what are some of the things you like about them as compared to, say, smaller clubs, and what are some of the difficulties of performing there?
I think just the energy and just being like this little 5'3" person that gets to command a crowd of thousands, like, that's beautiful to see how your music can bring these people that want to see you, and, you know, that'll call and respond with you. So it's just seeing the energy of the music go out in that way, and you know how you make all these people, like, you conducting them, it's just dope, man. It's just dope.
That's amazing. I assume you were on festival stages before you fully were aware how to work them and how
I've done
conduct
a few
people.
I still ain't done enough. I got way more to go. I've done a few. I'm still learning, man. I still see things I could do better and try. So that's always the fun part, like, yeah, I got Roots Picnic next. It's like, yeah, I know what I want to do different now. Like, it's just dope.
Nice. And who are you looking forward to seeing today?
Man, I miss J.I.D. because we were right behind each other, but I was looking forward to seeing him. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Erykah Badu. She's one of my favorite. Murs goes on later today. I'm going to check him out. Like, his energy on stage is crazy. I wonder if he still jumps up and does the splits in the air. Like, man, how you still doing that? Your knees ain't hurting yet. So that's dope, man. I like Migos. Like, I've never seen them perform live. But yeah, those are some.
And so, like you said, your style was even more sort of intense and concentrated when you started out. Do you think you're in a good place now as far as having it be streamlined but still complex? How are you? Is that a battle you're sort of still fighting?
Nah, we got that. We got it. You know, I'm still growing, still trying to learn. Like, that's one thing. Like, I never want to stop learning. It's like basketball. Like, you look at a Michael Jordan, or you look at a Kobe Bryant or LeBron James, and they've always been great, but they always add something different to their game every year. Like, even if when they get up in age, it's like when they were driving before, now they perfected the jump shot. So, you know, that's how I approach the stage, like, or the music or everything. Like, what can I continue to add to it?
What can you continue? What's the next thing for you stylistically?
Hooks, man. Hooks. Like, that's my next thing. Like,
you feel like that's something you haven't quite mastered?
Have not.
Yeah.
But we're going to get there. So it's cool.
Excellent. Well, Rhapsody, thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure to talk to you. Hope to have you back for a more in-depth interview soon.
Appreciate you.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Next up is Greaves. Greaves is a Rhymesayers artist who has been releasing increasingly personal and adventurous music over the past decade plus. On his most recent album, 2017's Running Wild, he teamed up with the Swedish producer Chords for a record that is multifaceted, lush, and ultimately completely captivating. I caught up with Greaves just minutes before he went on stage.
Greaves, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah.
Glad we get you for a few minutes before you perform.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. Can I say fuck yeah?
Absolutely. Yeah. Curse up
fuck
a storm.
Fuck yeah.
Awesome. What does being at Soundset mean as someone who is in this campus from this area?
I mean, for me, it always kind of feels like a family reunion because, you know, Rhymesayers, like, I don't live in Minnesota. I live in Seattle. There's a couple other artists that are kind of all over the place as well. And it's a rare occasion where we all get to be in the same place and we're all getting paid and everyone's happy. And it's like, it's, I don't know, it's really cool. And I've been coming to Soundset since 2008 when, like, I know there was one before it, but like really when they started doing this. So I think I've missed one or two out of all of them.
That's amazing. Rob, who is working hard over here engineering, was telling me earlier today that he saw you at a Pizza Luce in Duluth years and years ago. You remember that show?
Well, yeah. I mean, did you see me with Atmosphere? Did you? Atmosphere. That was 2007. Yeah. You old son of a bitch.
How was the pizza?
The pizza was good. I woke up that night to a lot of angry text messages on my phone. We'd had text messages then. We just didn't have, like, you know, like iPhone. You couldn't see, like, the about to text you again bubbles, none of that shit. I just had, like, a flip phone. And, no, that's a lie. I had a slide kick.
Ooh, fancy.
It was like the Sidekick, but it's the one that went squip and slid open.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess some chick was, like, partying with us. And I passed out super drunk, and she got in my bed, and my girlfriend was calling me, and she, like, picked up the phone, and my girl was like, who the fuck is this? And she's like, who the fuck is this? And they just got in this big argument, and I slept through the whole thing. So I lost my girlfriend that day. Yeah, I remember Duluth.
Oh, my God. Wow. Sorry to bring it up. We can pay
really
for
really insensitive of you guys. Should have read my press ride.
Right. We can pay your therapy session after this.
Yeah,
be great.
Cool.
So the new album, I really, really love it. Speaking of relationships that go from love to hate, obviously Guts, key song on there about the twisted love-hate relationship.
I think about you and say fuck you. Then you come over and
fuck you. Fuck you.
Was that inspired by maybe a real life situation?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Not that same girl.
No, she no. God bless her heart, but she never fucked like that.
So tell me about writing that song. What was going on with that?
Well, I think I was trying to that record in general. We made a lot of songs, right? And I did the whole thing in Stockholm, so I was just writing, and then we would start putting them together and kind of see what we had as far as an album is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing to me that was missing was like a very, like, I don't know if serious is the word, but like a very honest relationship kind of song. And because I feel like I covered a lot of the vibes that I set out to cover, but I didn't have that one that I think is kind of like a trademark for my records.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I wasn't currently going through it. I was just kind of channeling that energy of that situation. And I think just being as jet-lagged as I was and, like, just being as open as I was, like, creatively and musically at that time, I was able to come up with that song. And it was super stripped down, and it's, like, vulgar, and it's kind of uncomfortable. And it was by far the least or the most poorly received song I've ever released in my career.
Really?
Yeah, I've never gotten, like, fuck you, bro. This is garbage. Like, I've never gotten anything like that before. That was the first time. And I think it was good for me. I think it humbled me out, but I think it also means that I hit my mark with that song.
Right.
Because nothing about that song was supposed to be comfortable. Because I've done that subject so many times that it's like, I'm not just going to keep regurgitating the same song over and over. If I'm going to do this one more time, I'm going to do it like this, and it's done.
Is it part of every set now? Is it kind of fuck you to the people who didn't like it?
I've never played it live. Yeah. I might be a bitch on that one.
No Sleep is a really, you know, song about overcoming struggles.
Yeah.
All for granted. You walked into my temple open-handed, but you don't see the terrifying things that I've been keeping underneath these bloody bandages. You see the world's much realer on this side of the camera lens. You seek death but only get 6 feet. I cheat death and never get no sleep.
What was going on with you when you were writing that one?
That was... A lot of the times when I write, it's just kind of like a stream of consciousness that turns out to be very focused, mm-hmm. which is nice for me because it turns out that music has been able to be very therapeutic for me.
Right.
But a lot of the songs on Running Wild were very focused and, like, you know, since we had made so many songs, we started hitting vibes, like setting out to make a song of a certain vibe.
Mm-hmm.
But that one was very much so... a stream of consciousness. I remember it being really late and we were in the studio all day long and we couldn't really come up with anything, and he was just going through old beats.
The he here is Swedish producer Chords, who produced all of Reeves' 2017 album Running Wild.
And it was just that 2-bar loop on that sample, and he was just kind of like, I don't know, I'm going upstairs, I'm gonna do the dishes or some shit like that. Like, just, you know, do something else, clear the slate.
Yeah.
And so that was just kind of looping. And I just, you know, I made it like an 8-bar loop and did some drum drops and stuff like that. And then just went into the vocal booth, turned all the lights off, and wrote that whole song in like 20 minutes.
Wow.
And nice. It just, I didn't mean to do it. I didn't, like, and it just happened. Like, I didn't think about what the next line was going to be. It just happened. And then you step back from it and you're like, oh, whoa, like, damn. And then... like riding around Stockholm, like on the bus, like I was traveling around on the bus a lot. It's kind of like you're analyzing yourself when you listen to stuff that you've written that quickly. And it really came together. And that song was only that 8-bar loop all the way through. And then I got it back to Seattle and I was like, I'm really hearing kind of like, there's a song that the Hieroglyphics did called Make Your Move, and the hook on that is amazing. And I was like, I really hear like a female voice, like a soft female voice here.
Yeah.
And so I reached out to Paris and she came through, and when she laid the hook down, it kind of changed the whole song for me. So then that's why it gets funkier at the end.
Yeah.
Death and never get no sleep. It doesn't matter who you are. The sun is gonna set behind you, behind you, behind you. All alone in these streets. It doesn't matter where you are. The sun is gonna set behind you, behind you, behind you, behind you. All alone in these streets. It doesn't matter where you are.
And it, like, it's like 2 or 3 songs in one.
You know, as a fan of old 60s R&B, I love the vibe of 5,000 Miles. It really
Thanks.
Reminded me of that Stax type shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I thought was great.
5,000 miles away, you're on my mind all day. I don't know what else to say. Oh, I love you. I love you just to death. Oh, I love you.
Why have a song like that on there?
Because... I don't embellish on the positive side of love that much, I think. And when, like I had said, when we were looking for something that the record needed, I really felt like with all the positivity on that record and the different vibe and like the different energy and the funness and the, you know, the kind of lightheartedness of the record, I also wanted to touch down on the fact that it's like, hey, I'm actually pretty happy right now. And like, I don't want to write shitty love songs for the rest of my life. I would love it that people would accept it if I wrote some good, like some happy ones.
Right.
And so I love minor chords. So of course it like almost has a somber vibe to it. Right. But that's about, like, pleasantly missing somebody. Like, the idea that you miss somebody is actually comforting because, you know, you get to see them again.
Yeah, and there's a lot of singing on the record. It's kind of split singing and, oh, yeah, and rapping.
The more I progress as an artist, the more I think the things that I hear are developing. And, you know, the better my voice is getting. And, like, singing was, you know, an irreversible. It was a scary frontier, I guess. And but I mean, I've always done it on my records.
Right.
And now it's almost
But now it's like maybe half to a good chunk of stuff.
Well, and it's like par for the course now for hip hop. Like
almost
everyone's like doing the singy stuff. But, you know, I use some auto tune on the record. I'd never really done that before. People didn't really like that shit, but it's like, you know that I can do it without it. I think there's an art to it, and I wanted to explore different tones and textures and soundscapes. And
yeah, sounds kind of like you got outside your comfort zone quite a bit on this record.
100%, man. Like I did the whole thing in Stockholm, so I don't speak Swedish. Like, it was just me and the music. Well, I'd go out there for like 2 weeks at a time. I'd stay at the studio, and it was just making music. And then if I wanted to go clear my head, I had to walk around in a city where everyone's speaking a language that I don't understand. So it's almost like I'm just completely fucking alone, which sounds depressing, but I've never been that connected with the music ever. Like, I've never, because I always have a distraction, you know? If I'm working in my studio at home, I'm fucking around.
It's your home, right? There's people. Yeah.
Someone's like, hey, let's go get lunch. Or, you know, my manager comes in and is like, hey, I need you to sign these papers. Or look at this weird mole on my dick. And I'm like, yeah, you should have that checked out. And then we're Googling the mole on his dick for 2 hours. And it turns out he has AIDS cancer.
That sounds like a really, really terrible day. I hope that doesn't happen too much. Speaking of manager, he's giving us the time's up sign. So you got a lot to do, but thank you so much, Greaves, for coming by. I look forward to the set, man.
Hey, thanks for sitting down with me, man.
Absolutely.
Cool.
K Salam is a producer and DJ who, with his musical partner Beatnik, has made music with pretty much everyone. They've worked with Lil Wayne, Talib Kweli, Freddie Gibbs, Bun B, and many more. In addition, the team work with the legendary Ms. Lauryn Hill as an in-house production team, drum and music programmers, and sound designers. Kay, who is from Minneapolis but now mostly lives in Vancouver, was at the festival to reconnect with old friends, but also to DJ for Bun B.
Kay Salam, thanks for coming through the Cypher on this hot, hot, hot day.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Not used to this heat.
No, I know. Well, you're here, though.
I'm from here, but it's been a minute. I've been in Vancouver, and so the New York heat and the Minneapolis heat is actually, they get the same. It gets overbearing.
I was going to say, it's almost exactly the same temperature here that it is
New York.
In New York. I think it's raining there, so, you know.
That sounds good.
you're all for that right now?
Yeah.
Speaking of New York, you'll be there soon.
I'll be in New York soon. I teach a music production class at the Clive Davis Institute of Recorded Music, Tisch NYU. It's a fun class to teach. A lot of talented people. A lot of famous people coming through that class, actually.
That's awesome. So how are kids who grow up today where software recording is the norm, digital recording is the norm? What is that like to interact with them?
It makes it more competitive because everyone has access to be a producer. You know, even a lot of the DAWs or the software that you're supposed to buy, it's very easy to get for free.
I hadn't heard.
Yeah. And that makes it easy, but that just adds a lot of competition, and it's kind of like the NBA. It's like you get better players when there's more people competing to be in that little group.
Mm-hmm.
So the production-wise right now, I just feel like it's the highest it's ever been, and I don't see it going down anytime. So it kind of puts me in a good position as a teacher. I get to be in the loop with the new upcoming talent. I don't have to necessarily compete with them. I still do, but you know, it's like a tough crowd, man. It's a lot of talent, a lot of production talent out there.
And so do the young producers you meet, do they sort of think of things from a sample or a break-based approach or not?
Both. Some of them are samplers. Some of them want that 90s sound. Some of them do trap. Some of them, they combine. It really depends, man. It's both. And it's really multi-ethnic, you know what I mean? Multi-economic. You obviously need to have a computer, so you need some type of money, but you could have a really shitty computer and you know, download free software and compete with like the rich kid with all the money. So it kind of makes it dope, you know. Like it really, you really have a lot of different nationalities getting into the game. Production has always been like that to an extent, though. But it's different viewpoints on music, and it's a good time. It's a good time to be a teacher of music production at a high level, because again, like I get to see all the movement that's going on. And I get to steal all their
beats. You get to steal all their ideas.
Not really.
Yeah. Your most recent album with Beatnik is The Bluest Flame. Fantastic record.
Correct. Yep. That's the most recent joy. But we still have stuff, other stuff, like production stuff that's been coming out. I forgot specifically. But we just did that. You know, I have another project coming up very shortly.
Under the duo's name, or?
Yeah. It's going to be called the No Travel Band Tape. It's hard to explain what it is. It's like a collage of a bunch of different stuff that we've done. It's going to be the world's first interactive mixtape. So
wow, what does that mean exactly?
It's a surprise, but okay. It's not like anything anyone's heard before. It's not just a track or songs.
Wow.
It's
so the title seems like there's probably some politics in there.
Yeah, there is. I think it's time to bring that back. I kind of came into the game on that, and I fell back because I felt like it turned people off. But it's like, at what point do you say, I probably shouldn't have fell back on it? Like, Trump's president now, and everyone was telling me, okay, you're too political. And it's like, well, look what happens when you're not political. Look what happened.
Right. There will be vocalists involved in that?
There's some vocalists involved. We got some guests, special guest verses that you're going to have to listen to it to see who it is.
Right.
It's going to surprise a lot of people who we got on there. And we have a hidden track on there, but it's not a hidden track that you rewind because it's not in the CD. There's another way that you're going to have to get the hidden track. I'm not going to say.
Okay.
After like 2 months, if no one gets it,
then maybe you'll make it a little easier to find. Yeah.
But it's going to be a pretty amazing. I think people are going to be like, how did you get a track, a verse from that person? I guarantee you people are going to be thinking that. But yeah.
Whenever we talk to producers who have albums under their name, projects under their name, I like kind of getting to how they thought about it, right? Take the Bluest Flame as an example. You have a beat. Do you have a song title? Do you have a concept? Do you have vocalists in mind? How does that happen?
It depends, man. Everything is different. Sometimes we just send tracks to different people, and whoever likes it and wants to jump on it, cool. Sometimes we write the hook and we send the hook. It depends on the relationship with the artist. It depends on what the artist wants. Some artists, they just want a beat. Some artists, they want the hook. They want everything. But either way, we always structure our tracks so that it's like 16 bars for the verse. 8 bars for a hook, and then sometimes if they're like, yo, I want to do a 24-bar verse, then we'll change it. So the music is always structured. That's one thing that doesn't change. But as far as how deep we get into the songwriting process, it really depends. But usually I'm heavily involved. A lot of times, if me and my partner, Beatnik, are making the hook, I'm usually finding someone. I want to give a shout-out to Adrian, an artist. He's doing a lot of K-pop right now. He's done a lot of our hooks, some stuff we've done with Freddie Gibbs, with MERS. If I should die before I wait, just know some busters ran up in my spot and shot me in my face, cause I'm a motherfucking gangster. And I move through the day, carry on through the night. He's done a lot of stuff with us. That last Bun B song was written by a brother named Mikel McIntosh, and he was on Nas's album. He's done a lot of stuff. Damn, I thought you knew this shit, but it's cool. Just sit back, I'm about to do this shit. All I ask that you keep it 100 with me. We don't need to play these games. I just want you to be straight. So we kind of put everything together also. If we're not writing the hook, we're finding a writer, finding the vocalist, and like real producers in that way.
Right. And so do you arrange the song before the lead vocals? Do you do drops or changes in arrangement before lead vocals or after?
Before, and then if they ask us to change it, then we're always flexible.
But you like the idea of, okay, I know where the changes in arrangement are going to happen, and you'll rap to that.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Do you think that changes people's performance rather than just you give them a loop and then you arrange it afterwards?
I think that not only changes the performance, it just changes the fact of whether they want to work with you or not. I feel like when they hear a producer who understands music structuring, it's going to make them more apt to like get down with you. So I think and we've gotten a lot of compliments on that. Like, yo, your tracks are already structured for me to write a song. on it.
What is it like for you being back here in Minnesota, back here in St. Paul, back at Soundset?
Oh, man, it's beautiful, man. Like, I came up with Rhymesayers. My first tour ever,
of course, yeah.
ever was with Idea, rest in peace, was with Idea, brother Ali Musab, and I was, you know, the DJ of the tour, and me and Jay Bird, and you know, I used to DJ on the radio with Sadiq, and it was a kind of a big radio show, actually, and I used to DJ all the shows.
Yo, it's to the break of dawn. We got like hungry MCs here trying to eat these microphones, like, yo, let me get on that beat now. Just open up the mic. So
this was a radio program hosted by Brent Sadiq Sayers, the CEO of Rhyme Sayers. It was first called To the Break of Dawn and later changed its name to RSE Radio. The show was on 90.3 KFAI, a community radio station which at one point had programs in more languages than any other in the country. The freestyle sessions took place there were legendary.
So to come back and like kind of reconnect on the relationship, I'm very happy that that's happening.
Mikey must have been young in that tour.
It was right after he won the Blaze battle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was right. I remember he told me, he's like, I'm going to win the Blaze battle and I'm going to take you on tour because you're a dope DJ.
We like to congratulate Idea, the Blaze battle champion 2000.
The Blaze battle was started in 1998 by the now-defunct Blaze magazine. The only television iteration of the battle was aired on HBO in 2000 and was won by Idea.
And I was like, this kid's cocky.
Yeah, sure, kid, whatever, yeah.
Well, I didn't say sure because he's cocky, but he could back it up, you know? So I was kind of like, well, he might win this, and he did.
Wow.
Yeah.
What are your memories of him from that tour?
Just the camaraderie. You know, one show, even though he was kind of a superstar at the time, it was still... Rhymesayers were still building. They were still making money and whatnot. But like one show would literally be like 30 people. The next show would be, you know, 5,000 people. And then it was a Midwest tour. So we hit places like Pontiac, Michigan, and Lansing, Michigan. Then we also hit Milwaukee at a time that there was a big hip hop festival. And we did Chicago at this big venue. So it was like it was a huge experience. You know, my first tour was that tour. And it was a dope experience, you know?
Nice. And so what made you kind of leave this town and go up north?
I just felt like my sound, I wanted to do my own thing. I didn't want to, at that time, be connected with anything. I don't know if that was the right move, but at the same time, it ended up working out. And, you know, everyone from Rhymesayers has been real supportive. And like, yo, it's good to have you back working with us. And I wanted to go to New York and make it as a DJ, actually, more so than a
really,
producer.
Really? More than a producer.
Then I realized that DJ skills in New York were completely, I won't say completely, and they're coming back, but I would say very irrelevant compared to, like, other things.
In terms of if you're going to work as someone who spins records
exactly.
In places where people pay you money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, I didn't come here to compete with models. How do I compete? That's not fun for me. So then I realized, but talent producing... Talent matters, but there's always politics. But it doesn't matter if you're Paris Hilton or if you're Scottie Pippen. They're not going to buy a beat from Scottie Pippen.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're going to have him DJ their party and they'll pay him $100,000. But like, they're going to buy a beat and they're going to get people who are going to make their artists sound good. You know what I'm saying? So that's why I was like, okay, this is something that I can compete in. And that's why I kind of moved towards production. But I'm a turntablist at heart.
Well, yeah, as we're speaking, you'll be spinning later tonight.
Correct.
At the official Soundset After Party.
Yep.
What can we look forward to there?
I'm going to be started off with some old school and kind of bringing it into the new. And then I'll be backing up Bun B. We're doing our new song, Keep It 100, Beating in Case Salam, featuring Bun B and Adi Armour. Really dope song. We got a video on there. Google that or YouTube it. You know, debuted on Complex.
The author of that article about that premiere might seem familiar to Cypher fans.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
He's a jerk. I hate him, but...
yeah. So, it should be fun.
You know, I saw you talking to Bun earlier, and you're about to hop on stage with him. We gotta wind down in a minute, but how did you first form a relationship with Bun?
Through a guy named Josh. His name was Hallway J. He ran a blog called Ill Roots. I think they're still around, but he doesn't run it anymore. And he was a big Beatnik and K-Salam supporter. And he was just like, I got to link you. Because he was doing blogs, he linked me with Bun B. We did a video. And ever since then, Bun has been very supportive. He likes the movement, likes the music. And Bun is the type of dude, if he's really feeling what you're about, he's going to get with it. He's not an industry guy at all. You know, there's not all that many rappers who are like that, you know, and that's, I think that is also why he's been around so long. He really does it for the love.
Not to give any spoilers, but by the time people hear this, the festival will be long over. You're about to DJ for him on the main stage.
The side stage, main stage, we're going to do a song on each of the stages, and then we're going to do the after party.
That's amazing. What is he going to be performing?
He's performing the International Players Anthem with everybody, mm-hmm. you know,
classic
hip hop song, UGK, Outkast, Andre 3000, and then also he's gonna, if we have time on the main stage, we'll be doing the Keep It 100,
the Keep It 100 song.
Case alarm, beatnik, let's do this shit, man. Yeah, Trill OG, and I came in here to tell the truth. Reality rap while these other cats sell a booth. They never been nowhere and they ain't never seen shit. Grew up in the suburbs, homogenized, clean shit.
The video for that, very long form video. The song itself is only about a minute and a half.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
Yeah.
But the video is sort of full video length, 4 minute track about kind of Fox News and the alt-right and the kind of like ever present right wing talk show, you know, yes, thing that a lot of politics has become.
Throats, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Professor, now that we have a president who represents all Americans, inequality has become a thing of the past. Does the president deserve all the credit for this? Or just some of it?
What are you talking about? We don't have equality in America, not racially, not sexually, not even ideologically, man. And if you want to give him credit for something, give him credit for that.
Why do that?
You know, the crazy thing was that wasn't me. That was the film, the video makers, Neiman Kately, Nick Jackson, David Van Russell. I got to give them credit. They did that, and they were like, you know, they were kind of asking me what direction you want to take this. Can we take this in like a, you know, F Trump? I was like, definitely. We need to be on some F Trump stuff right now.
Right.
You know, we need to be talking about that. What he's doing is dangerous. I've never been a fan of any of these presidents, including Obama. But what Trump is doing is extremely dangerous, you know. And it affects me, it really affects a lot of people, even white people. If you don't have a lot of money, he's going to affect you in a negative way. But my background, my family's Iranian, so we've been affected.
Oh, so
by
it especially has already affected you.
Has already affected me, yeah.
In a number of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, my family, a lot of my family came here as immigrants. Obviously, everybody came here as immigrants except for Native Americans, and a lot of African Americans were forced here.
Right.
So other than that, everybody here was here as an immigrant. So it's just, it's like, it's crazy, man.
How has that been for you, for your family, him reviving the Bush era kind of axis of evil talk? I mean, he hasn't used that phrase, but he sort of revived Iran as this official enemy in a way that at least somewhat had started to die down over the past several years.
Luckily, my family's strong. We've been through a lot, and my family doesn't really, they're good at like letting things bounce off of them. I always just worry about like, my aunts and my cousins, more so the women who are kind of open target for these white supremacist groups who want to just attack people. So that's more what I'm worried about. But I grew up here, so this isn't necessarily new.
The situation is awful all around.
Definitely.
And I'm glad you did the video. And Bun, actually, I'm sure just from years of experience, makes a great cable TV news personality.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell he's a professor. You can tell he's been, you know, obviously on the mic being in front of crowds, but also talking, rapping in front of crowds and talking in front of audiences is a little bit different. And when you've done both, it kind of... He fit in real well. It was dope. I was glad that he was down to do that.
So when was the last time you were at Soundset?
My last Soundset, honestly, because I was so busy, was in Soundset 2000 when I DJed at First Avenue.
Wow.
Yeah.
And crazy. So what is it like to be back 18 years later?
To be back and see how big they did it, you know what I'm saying? And I really got to give them a lot of credit, you know? This is such a huge event. And I've done events before. And to see them not even really stressed out. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Shows how organized and like how under control they have everything, you know. And that's dope. And it's like I said, I'm really grateful to be back in the fold of things, you know. So shout out to Rhymesayers, shout out to the Cypher Show for you guys having me on here.
Thank you. Yeah. And so real quick before you go, what else is going on with K-Slump? You got the teaching.
I actually have a podcast coming up as well.
Oh shit! Okay. More competition.
More competition. No, it's not competition because it's specifically producers and engineers. And I try to focus on people who aren't necessarily in the limelight. Mm-hmm. Like I got Clive Chin, who actually started dub music and doesn't really get credit for it. And he's the father of Joel Chin, who, rest in peace, was the biggest reggae A&R ever to do it. So I got him, and then one with Nick Sansano, who's a It's going to be dope. So I got a podcast coming up this summer.
What's the name so people can check for it?
Behind the Glass Booth.
Okay.
Yeah, Behind the Glass Booth.
Nice.
So that's going to be dope. And a bunch of projects. So just check me out, social media. I finally got an Instagram up like 2 days ago, K-Slam and Beatnik. And just Google us and, you know, check out our YouTube. Yeah, man, we've been doing this for a while. Like, we like to say we're your favorite producer, but you don't know it. That was somebody else's idea, a little pitch. But we produce a lot of stuff that people are like, they come up to me and they're like, "This, you know, do you know who produces? Because this is my favorite song." And I'm like, "Well, actually, I produce that record." So we've done a lot of stuff that people don't really know about. We're kind of in the behind the scenes. But we've gotten a lot of tracks out there, a lot of different artists, different levels, different countries. And I'm just grateful to still be in it.
Awesome. K-Slam, when you're in New York, we'll have you come through for a full-length interview. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
All right. Cool. Thanks, buddy.
Sarok is an MC who has built up a name for herself with a whole series of strong independent releases. Her brand of God Hop combines self-empowerment with politics, but doesn't forget to have a good time or bring some powerful rhymes. She has even earned a cosign from the great Black Thought, who has sung her praises on Wax and brought her on stage to perform with The Roots. Sarok is newly signed to Rhymesayers and is readying her debut album for the label.
Sarok, thank you for coming through. I saw you perform last night. It was, sadly for me, the first time I've ever seen you perform, but it was it was amazing.
Thank you.
Even a short set. I look forward to the full thing very soon.
Yeah, last night was really dope, you know, being in a space full of, you know, a lot of powerful, talented women.
Sarok performed at the famed Minneapolis club First Avenue the night before this interview as part of a dance party called the Clituation. The event doubled as a pre-party for Soundset. The Clituation is, quote, a dance party created by and for women, women identifying, non-conforming, and queer women.
Sometimes the shortest sets are the most impactful. So I had a good time, like, performing the latest single and a new joint that I haven't released before, but yeah.
That was cool to kind of give people a taste of, like, this is coming, this is new, you know, you haven't heard this yet.
Yeah, and then it's kind of, like, giving people kind of primed for, that's going to be my next, like, video single.
Sort of road test material before you put it out in the world.
Yeah, it's a good idea to kind of get a gauge of what, you know, what we'll be expecting as far as, like, response. So,
doing a quick sort of note taking before meeting with you, and I saw that one of your, if not your first performance, was benefit for Betula Shakur.
Yeah,
which I actually just finished a very lengthy article about the history of the BLA, so I was very interested in that.
Birmingham jail back in 1963. I asked the boy, "Why are you here?"
Betula Shakur, Tupac's stepfather, was a member of the Black Liberation Army, a radical offshoot of the Black Panther Party. In October 1981, six BLA members, including Shakur, attempted to rob an armored car at a mall near Nyack, New York. One guard and two police officers ended up dead as a result. Shakur evaded the police for years, but was caught in 1986 and sentenced to 60 years in 1988. He has been up for parole since 2016, but has so far been denied.
Can you tell me about how that came to be?
There's a long history of activism in Atlanta, which is, I've since transplanted there from D.C. And there's a community called Malcolm X Grassroots, and Tupac's Foundation is also in Atlanta. So there were several, like, benefits that happened to raise awareness and funds for political prisoners. Mm-hmm. That have contributed greatly to the community, which we now benefit from.
Right.
So I had literally just, I was fresh, wet behind the ears, never performed before. And the guy who used to put on the event, Iros Levi, he hosted this, like, underground hip hop radio show. And he was like, "Yo, okay, so we're going to hear Sarok next." And I'm like, "What?" I'm there just, you know, supporting the event. And all of a sudden, I'm pulled on stage to rock. And when I did, I knew that this was my future.
Wow. Yeah. So what was that first performance like? What do you remember about it?
Oh, it was sickening. I was nauseated. Like, it was so scary because I'm by nature a very shy, reserved person. I do not like the spotlight, anything like that. So to be thrust in front of people and forced to kind of share my art and not know, like, how they were going to respond to it was a very scary thing. But I think that was just, it was just indicative of what my path was going to be.
So you have obviously gotten a huge cosign from one of the greatest rhymers out there. Black Thought did interludes for you.
She's one of the dopest, most energetic MCs I've come across in a while. And she's definitely well deserving of all the glory about to come her way. I'm talking about the homegirl, Sarok. That's coming from me, Pensado Negro.
What does it mean to you out of his support as someone who's such an elite rapper himself?
Ah, It's really mind blowing. Sometimes, a lot of times, I pinch myself because, you know, to have these people who I grew up listening to, and you know, he's always been dope, but his pen game has has evolved to solidify his position as the GOAT for real. So to have him be in support of me and to have him like pull me on stage with the Roots and stuff like that, I've performed with them maybe 3 or 4 times.
Where I turn my sentences to loaded guns and costume. They stay along me where sinisters and monsters. Now I'm playing venues in the center of a mosh.
Hey, yo, this is Sal Rock, ladies and gentlemen. Make some noise.
Hey, it's really validating. You know, because, you know, as artists, sometimes we go through, you know, we're very mercurial and we go through periods where we're like doubting ourselves.
You don't say.
Yeah. you know. So it means a lot to have someone like that be in support of you. It's a reminder like, okay, yeah, okay, I am dope. Because he ain't going to just back anybody.
Right.
You know.
Certainly not.
So it's humbling for sure.
Yeah. And so you just signed to Rhymesayers.
Yeah.
Have a few things out on there. So how'd you end up there?
They actually reached out to us. We have been kind of, I guess, familiar with the same circles for a little bit. And it just worked out that they were a good fit. We were looking for someone that could further the movement and kind of like bolster like bolster our movement, give us a little bit more visibility and stuff like that. And being as though they're an independent label and they really care about their artists and every single one of their artists are like really intentional and really unique in the way that they express themselves, like they really support that and they give you time and space to kind of figure out what you're going to do. And I love that because being doing our own thing for so long, you know, we're used to just throwing out projects, not having anyone else involved in like the curation of a project and stuff. And it still kind of feels like that, but they're also providing levels of like wisdom and guidance to help it perform well on a larger platform. So yeah, it's been really wonderful.
And you're working on an album now, or it's finished, or?
We're very close.
Is there anything you can tell about it?
It's going to be called The Sharecropper's Daughter, and it's a departure from my normal albums. Like, I've kind of given hints of myself in the 12-plus albums that I have, but this one is a little bit more personal and intimate.
Why?
Just because, you know, I've always looked at the craft as a form of therapy and catharsis. And I felt that it was important for me to share a piece of me that hadn't previously been revealed to foster more of a connection to the supporters. And this is also like help me work through and process some of the stuff that has made me who I am, you know, and it's really important for me to tell my story as someone, you know, who came from an impoverished, you know, community. Came from a background of generational trauma and history and experience and stuff. And I've seen just through dropping my latest single Forever, like just offering, you know, some more of that personal stuff, how much more you can touch people.
I know it's heavy than me. No titles for pretending. I was 14 years old, forcing pills down my throat, so my baby fat diminished. Still got these scars from cutting my wrist when I thought that life was finished. Now they remind me what my lows look like. Now I know the sky's the limit. Okay. Never claim to be perfect.
You know, because there's so many people who are experiencing real shit.
Yeah.
And when they know that you're a real person and you've gone through that shit too, it's not about like, you know, dope
and not
pictures
just like
on Instagram.
I'm a dope rapper or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Or I'm a dope rapper. I got so many skills. But about like, who are you as a person? You know, and that's really important to share sometimes. Of course, you know, protecting your privacy, but giving enough so that your supporters can feel that you're investing as much as they're investing.
So you're not rhyming with the name of your street or whatever to say exactly where you like you're saying, keep some privacy.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. I live
at. I give y'all my social security number or anything. Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned generational trauma because I feel like that is an idea that is finally starting to gain currency, especially as regards Black and brown people and sort of their histories in the United States. Have you seen that sort of an upswing of people talking about that and I think taking that a little more seriously?
There's a lot more discourse about that. There's an academic, Joy DeGruyter, and she speaks a lot about that and how a lot of the things that oppressed people or marginalized people have experienced have like embedded into genetic.
Right, it's literally a cellular level in some cases. Yeah.
So we're looking at 246 years of American chattel slavery. And it's very comfortable, and I think to some degree people can say, you can't have 246 years of trauma and expect that nothing happened, especially when that trauma was followed by more trauma.
Exactly. And so once we start to dialogue about that, we can start to understand how, you know, certain behaviors and certain even mental health issues and stuff like that have manifested, and we can treat those things. Because a lot of times, you know, even like within like my life, my family's life and stuff like that, like something, for example, something simple like anxiety, like dealing with like serious anxiety disorder, being able to relate that back to, you know, a familial history of that, or, you know, certain things, certain traumatic experiences that have been passed down, and it gives me a deeper understanding, okay, this is what I have to do spiritually to kind of like work through that. So when I have if I have children, it's not passed on to them, you know? And then hopefully through the work that I create.
Yeah, I was going to ask, obviously your art fits into that as well, talking about it and trying to make it public both for yourself and for your audience.
Yeah. And I just think that there's a lot more that needs to be discussed about like how trauma can manifest. Like there's so much work, you know, that's being kind of revealed more so, like from Holocaust survivors to, you know, people who have experienced like obviously slavery and then later on sharecroppers, which my family were sharecroppers. So the more we kind of like dialogue about that, the more people can start to kind of start doing the work, start doing the healing work and stuff. And that's exactly what I'm doing as I'm writing this album.
As someone who, you know, comes from a family with sharecropping background, what was it like for you to have, you know, one of the biggest Oscar nominated films of the year be about in part that history?
Are you talking about Mudbound? Yeah, I mean, it was painful to watch for sure, because I definitely saw a lot of parallels between my family's history and them. But I was grateful that the story was being told, because that's a part of history a lot of times that gets kind of erased.
Sure. Slavery ended and then...
Right, and then that was it. It was all hunky-dory right. And, you know.
Yeah. But maybe people wanted to vote 50 years later, you know, 100 years later, and yeah, it's kind of missing the middle part.
And it's like hearing my parents' stories or my father's stories of his experience and what he remembers. It's painful for sure. And I've realized since like how like paralleling like my experience growing up like in the hood and kind of figuring that whole thing out and figuring out like substance abuse issues with like my family and stuff like that. Like I have a greater like respect for how much strength that my family has exemplified in the midst of all of that, you know? So in the wake of all that, rather, I should say. Yeah, so I'm glad that, you know, it's getting more visibility for sure.
On Brother Ali's new record, you have a song with him.
I'm glad I could be of some benefit. God bless. The voice ain't the sound coming out of the hole. That's from deep down inside of our soul. Something y'all need to know.
Late at night, I find it harder to rest easy, bruh. It's like this heartache has no intention of easing up. Because every 24 hours is another homicide. And they keep telling me that being emotional isn't reasonable.
So tell me about making that.
Yeah, that was dope. That was dope. Of course, I've been an admirer of his work for quite some time. And I just thought the theme of the song was beautiful. Just talking about, like, just loved ones and how, like, we may go through periods or spells where... maybe there's discord or maybe there's a difference of opinion and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, like, we have love. You know what I'm saying? And that is what sustains us for people in relationships that we actually care about preserving. And my verse talked about, like, my relationship with my dad, who, you know, of course, as being, you know, a sharecropper's son, he, you know, you want your kid to be, I want you to be a doctor. I want you to be, you know, so that was the path that he wanted to see me go on. And he didn't understand that that wasn't for me. I was good at school, all of that. I could have done it, but it just wasn't me. My spirit, like, moved me towards, you know, creativity. And he's an artist, too. But, of course, he didn't want to see me struggle.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, you know, trading my BA for another set of letters.
Now I'm just trying to find a way that I can maintain. So I turn this love affair with words into my main thing. Putting all the hope I got left in the vocal expression and maybe the message to make the world amazing. And finally my daddy could understand me a little better. See why I gave up my BA for another set of letters.
Because, you know, realizing through my love of music that same life's blood was necessary to kind of maintain our relationship and connection. So,
and how does he feel now about your career choice?
I feel like he still probably would.
He wouldn't
love
be sad
if I
you
got,
were to be a doctor.
Yeah, he wouldn't be sad, but he's been very supportive. Like he's come to, you know, any show that I've done in DC, he's come to. If he's in Atlanta and I do a show, he comes out. And you know, he's almost 70 years old, but he's there, you know, supporting his daughter. So yeah.
Yeah, and so you have obviously a long-running partnership with Soul Messiah as a producer, as a DJ. Is that continuing in the new album?
Yes.
Why do you work so well together? What's the chemistry?
I think, one, because, I mean, we started from the very beginning. I wasn't even rhyming when I met him. And it just kind of happened organically, just in the studio, kind of like playing around, like, let me try this out kind of thing. And so from the very, very beginning, he understood, like, my strengths and where I needed to grow as well. So he was able to create music to work towards that. I mean, to support that, you know. So as we've grown, where I've developed my voice and figured out exactly what I wanted to say and how I wanted to express, it's just been a really good fit because I can... Like, there's no, like, egos involved or anything like that. I can be like, oh, well, you know, ease back on that or give me more of this. And this would be, you know, more fitting to, like, this kind of flow. I can give him ideas or whatever on what, you know, what I'm looking for. And, you know, since we have an actual real partnership, an intimate partnership, then that we can actually be compassionate towards one another. And you know, he knows when to ease back when I'm just not in the creative mood. I need space to just kind of, like, just... not do anything, you know? So that helps for sure.
And when can we look forward to the new record? She's making a face, audience.
Hopefully the end of this year. I don't foresee it going past 2018. We're finishing up now, as I've said, and we want to kind of make sure that we're riding the wave of, like, some of the things that we've released. Definitely don't want it to go far. So fall, winter of this year.
Awesome. Well, Sawrok, thank you so much. We'd love to have you back for a full chat at some point very soon.
For sure. I would love that. Thank you for having
me. Thank you.
Regular listeners to The Cypher will remember Prof. He was a guest back on episode 125. The Minnesota rapper who built his name on a good time vibe, wild live shows, and top-notch rhyming to back it up, had at that point just signed to Rhymesayers after a career running the show himself. His second and latest album on the label is Pookie Baby.
So I was stuck back here working. How was the set?
I don't know. I'd honestly have to see a replay because I don't remember. It was a blur.
It sounded great from what I could tell.
It was good. The one thing I do remember is that my calm songs like Criminal and... the second half of True Love, we call it Post London because that's how he worked on it. It's like two separate songs. Those really soft, introspective, important songs to me.
Last night I was a criminal. Loose cannon. Burning bridges looking for one. Please pour me some heartache.
Went over pretty well. So everybody was just sitting and listening. Usually in a festival, everybody's like, all right, fuck
that's
this.
That's the time to go.
All right, anyway,
beer.
So where are you going? Where do you want to go? What are you doing? Okay, I'm not peaking no more. Oh, my God, you know. So those went over well. And so that's one thing I remember being like, okay, this we're going to vibe. This is good. My intro felt really good. My exit was just sloppy and stupid. It was crazy.
What was the exit this year?
I put 2 years ago, I put just like a 12-foot raft out, and I did the whole song in the raft.
As you do?
Yeah, this year, I put three rafts out, all of them a lot bigger, a lot more obnoxious. One was like a flamingo, one was like a unicorn, and I don't know. And they were 16 feet long, 9 feet high, like, and so there was a person on each one of them. And we were just running all, I mean, the whole song in the crowd, running on top, just rolling over people, and it was just crazy.
last song in the crowd on these three. Walker, I want you in that blue one.
Okay, check.
I'm gonna get in the pink one, obviously.
Check.
Oh my God.
Mac Irvin's gonna go on that one.
Oh.
Hey, the people who are riding, if you see them point to where they wanna go, everybody, we need teamwork. We need everybody helping out the rider to where they wanna go, okay? Is everybody
amazing. So the last time I talked to you was right around when the last record was released, and now there has since been Pookie Baby. So what were you trying to accomplish differently with this album than the previous one?
I don't know if I'm ever trying to accomplish anything different. I'm just trying to get better every time and say something new. So I don't know if the last one was... I don't really like to have... let me write it up in a sentence what liability meant to me and what Pookie Baby means to me. It's like,
right.
It's for real, it's all a blur to me and it's all the same shit. Like, I just want to get better and express myself faster, easier, more openly. And then from that, there's a different personality to every record. So in the meantime, I got older, you know, I got wiser, I learned to love a little bit harder. So Pookie Baby still is a little bit more dominant. You still feel like some songs like Andre the Giant or like, yeah, I'm still flexing.
I run the city, my thought I wore some cleats, huh? You never heard someone like this upon the beat, huh? Tootie fruity, the booty duty is jury duty. Moody.
You know, I've carved my path out there. But, you know, I express love and more so than ever on any album.
And it's kind of even a growing confidence, I think, on this record in your abilities and in sort of your place in the firmament of rappers.
It's almost like I thought I was going to blow up a decade ago, for real. And I haven't. I never have. But now I'm realizing that, damn, if I just keep my annoying ass out in the public and keep working, like eventually, oh, yeah, that guy again. Like, I've seen what just time does to a career. I've never really skyrocketed anywhere here or there, but now, like, oh, that guy again? Oh, yeah, not, time has just put a stamp on my career, and now more people are recognizing me kind of weirdly as an OG when I thought I'm kind of in the middle. You know, I've always imagined myself as a new upcomer, just too wild and whatever. I'm not, like, atmosphere OG status, but I'm starting to just people recognize me wherever I go just because of the fucking years I put in, you know?
And you mentioned Andre the Giant, obviously one of my favorite songs on the album. So what's your personal favorite Andre the Giant moment of all time?
I think Andre the Giant moments are just me walking out on stage and being like, this is bigger. This is bigger. You know, there's not like one moment. It happens all the time. Like I said, my career's been really slow or whatever, but every year I have 10, 15, 20 instances where I'm like, oh shit, this is bigger. And I just came back from the Pookie Baby tour, and I'm like, wow, every show in these weird-ass secondary markets for me that I've never even headlined in, it was cracking. Like, almost every one was packed. Usually there's crazy ups and downs, and I perform in front of 30 people here and there, but I might have done 26 shows, and, like, 24 were fucking packed.
And why Andre the Giant as a symbol? What did he mean to you?
Nothing, really. Nothing at all. It was more
just
about what does this song mean? The song is like, oh, it started with the character of the song, and the creeping up, that's a huge braggadocious shit.
I can't live in demon, I live at the funeral, I got no need for a shooter. Yeah! I'm getting bigger. Yeah! Do you want to reconsider? Yeah!
And then I'm like, what do we want to title this song? I'm getting bigger. I'm like, who gets bigger? Well, that dude sure did get bigger, you know, in eighth grade.
So the last time we talked, you had just sort of joined up with Rhymesayers officially.
Yeah.
And now you're back at their festival. How do you feel in terms of the label now? You feel more comfortable with them? You feel like you belong more?
I feel way more comfortable. I feel like I belong more. But as far as, like, a label goes and how long they've worked and, like, their best friends, like, I feel like I'll always be a little outsider. Like, I don't feel any ownership in this at all.
Right. I think you were saying that last time, so that feeling hasn't gone away.
No. But, like, just the generosity they've shown me and the love that I feel for them back. And I fucking absolutely love Sadiq. You know what I mean? So I'm there's no way I'll feel any type of ownership or entitlement over Rhymesayers.
Right. I mean, they had 20 years of building stuff.
It'll never happen.
Before.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even before they signed me, I was selling out Prof Outdoors, which was a sold out 4,000 capacity outdoor room. You know what I mean?
Mm.
I've never felt this way before a show, for real. I'm actually really fucking happy.
Prof Outdoors is Prof's annual festival outside the Caboose, a music venue that's central to Minneapolis's hip-hop scene. In the festival's four-year run, he has performed alongside such acts as Mystical, Run the Jewels, Hobson, Mac Lethal, Ciroc, and many more.
And I have given, I'm positive I've given Rhymesayers a new wave of something here and there, but they've done so well for themselves, and they're so tied in. Like, there's no way I could take any credit for anything they've ever done.
And so you're trying to keep the Stop House, your brand, going in the midst of all this?
Absolutely. I mean, Stop House is my brand. Rhymesayers, how I signed to them is exactly what I wanted. They're 100% artistic freedom. So they don't do anything artistic for me. I come to them with all the material. So Stop House makes all the material with me. And we go, we hand it in, here's the material, put it out. And then they take over. So that's exactly how I wanted it. And it's working out super good with this album, better than Liability. It's more smooth.
You talked about how you're writing this record, that the process of creating the lyrics was different, right? That it was more sounds, more melodies, more cadences before the words.
Yeah, you saw that somewhere. Yeah, that was, yeah.
Why did it come out that way this time, do you think?
I think that's because the way it should be done. I think I finally learned. Before, I was so concerned with, like, battle rapping and lines. Like, I did come out of the, you know, South Side Minneapolis in the 90s and the early 2000s. I was rapping throughout all that shit and battling people. And I was more about, like, what's the punchline? What's the bars?
That's how I go. My name's Prof. Knock you out your flip-flops with the boob slop. I'm a loop cop. Look, just like that.
Or what's the metaphor with Slug? You know what I mean? Like, Slug has got these crazy good metaphors. And so I was like, what is... I need bars, 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 bars. And now I'm more feeling, I'll do that with the next record and every record on. I'll feel the rhythm, feel the song, and let the beat and the melody direct me to where I need to go from now on.
Awesome. And finally, you know, we're at Soundset. We're about midway through the day. Who are you looking forward to seeing?
I'm not going to see anybody. I kept them being like, I can't wait to see. It says Wu-Tang. That's it. It doesn't say Wu-Tang, a.k.a. this person, this person, this person. It says all of them. I'm like, what the fuck is that? And what are the odds that that's going to happen? I got to see that. Nope. I'm going to be in a meet and greet at my merch booth from 5 to 6, and then from 6 to whatever. I'm just busy. I won't see anybody. And it's fucking lame.
Hopefully next year. Prof, thanks so much for swinging by, man.
Dude,
really,
it's been a pleasure,
it.
Man. Thank you.
All right.
Join us in 2 weeks when we'll bring you the second part of our Soundset special, featuring talks with Nikki Jean, OG Grip, and the return to the Cypher of both Evidence and MERS. To make sure you hear each episode of the Cypher as soon as it comes out, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast you use. Make sure you check out our archives when you're there. If you like this episode, listen to our talk with Rhymesayers head honcho Slug from Atmosphere on episode 178. By the way, if you use Apple Podcasts to listen, go now and give us a rating and a review. It's by far the easiest way to help us out, which is why every podcast you listen to wants you to do it. Seriously, go now and do it. And you can really help us by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you each episode takes at least 20 hours of work, and we could really use the support. If even 20% of you gave us just $1 a month, I'd be able to afford an inflatable raft of my own so I could be ready for Prof's next concert. And again, go buy a shirt, a mug, or whatever you want at merch.thecyphershow.com. You can find us at The Cypher Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Follow us and let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see on the show in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cypher is created and written by Sean Sotaro.
The highest it's ever been.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
You old son of a bitch.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
It's really mind-blowing. A lot of times I pinch myself.
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
Just sloppy and stupid.
Audio editing and recording are by Rob Van Vranken.
He's always been dope.
Special thanks to Richie Abbott and everyone at Juggernaut Sound.
Fuck yeah.
We'll see you next time around on The Cypher.